Welcome to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Here's your host, Tom Temin.
The Defense Department recently deployed systems to let banks and other lenders instantly check potential borrowers' military status. At the same time, they're checking their credit records. It's a response to the Military Lending Act. Last month, the law added a host of new protections for members of the military, including a 36% interest rate cap on nearly all credit products. Jason Lakey is Senior Vice President for Automotive and Consumer Lending at TransUnion. He spoke about this with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu.
We've executed thousands of searches on behalf of lenders, and in fact, we also have several hundred lenders have already signed up and are actively using our Military Lending Act database search solution.
Let me ask it this way. So, I mean, out of a population of more than 1.3 million active duty folks plus their families, it's hard for me to gauge whether thousands is a lot or not. Is it roughly in line with what your expectations would have been for the first month?
Yes, it is. So, as you said, 1.3 million out of an active credit population of just over 200 million, you'd expect a hit rate of about a percentage point or so. So you don't expect to see it that often, but for lenders, it's particularly important to know when one of their borrowers or one of their members of their credit union is covered under the Military Lending Act.
Yeah, and I want to come back to that in a second, but the Defense Manpower Data Center has had this website for years where basically anybody could go in and plug in somebody's name and DOB and social and find out whether they were on active duty. How's your service different, and where are you pulling the data from?
So our service is different in that we're enabling the lenders to access the same data that's in the database, however, through TransUnion as they would pull the credit report, which is about the time that they would want to check for the Military Lending Act coverage at the time. So it's the same database. The system is different in that we take a copy of that database to TransUnion on a regular basis, and it allows lenders to check it in real time the same way that they would a credit report, or to do it in large bulk files as they would to prepare for mailings and those sorts of things, which is a little different than I think is you're able to do on the MLA search on that DMDC site, because I believe you can either do it as a one-off search or you can do small batches of that. I don't believe that portal is structured for the high volumes that a TransUnion and the two other national CRAs can do with our own military lending solutions.
Yeah, I'm sure that's right. So did that require some sort of special arrangement with DOD in terms of getting access to the data in bulk and then, I assume, protecting it? Because it's pretty sensitive if you're going to have the whole master file of everyone's status.
Yeah, so actually it was a collaborative effort between the three national credit reporting agencies and the DOD to both figure out the technical ways to make this happen to ensure the security and performance of the data, as well as to do the contracting to make sure that everything that we're doing together is compliant with all the rules around managing such a sensitive database. What I think one of the great news is for this is that TransUnion and our two competitors, we're a highly regulated organization that's entrusted with managing consumer credit files, and we have an infrastructure that's secure and compliant, all in, and together creates, a really good solution for lenders to easily comply with the expanded scope of the Military Lending Act.
Yeah, and is this an entirely new line of business for the credit bureaus? I mean, were you guys in the business of reporting military status at all? I mean, was that part of someone's credit record prior to this?
No, it's not, actually, as part of the record. Again, it's information that this particular part of it was always housed with Department of Defense, and through the earlier enactment of the Military Lending Act, best to go directly to the DMDC to get that information.
So the customer base, it's basically the same people that you are already selling services to, because they are people who are going to be running credit checks on almost any potential borrower in the first place, right? So this is just basically an add-on service. Is that fair?
Yes, it is. So there are a couple of things. The the expansion of the rules of the regulations around the Military Lending Act actually brought in a much wider set of lenders. Prior to the enactment of the expanded regulations, it was primarily focused on payday lenders and other short-term folks who didn't use traditional credit reporting agencies like TransUnion for getting background information. But when the rules expanded and covered other types of loans that traditional financial institutions like banks, credit unions make, that's when it made sense for those institutions to come through the national credit reporting agencies to get that information through the credit report. And from a operational perspective, it really makes a lot of sense. Again, the time you want to know when a borrower is covered under the Military Lending Act is the time you make the lending decision. And since you're coming to get the credit report for that, it makes sense to get that information as well. There are several other solutions that we offer to also support compliance. We offer a way to make an OFAC check at the time of origination to know if somebody's a suspicious person.
As I'm sure you know, the lenders and their regulators have expressed concern over the past year or more that there's quite a bit of compliance risk involved in complying with the MLA, just because they would have to go and run searches on each and every potential lender to find out whether they were covered by the MLA. If they use a service like TransUnion's, is there basically a safe harbor where they're covered and they're immune from failing to comply?
There is a safe harbor associated with using one of the national credit reporting agencies like TransUnion for the Military Lending Act search. And that's if the lender uses the Military Lending Act database search to check for coverage, that satisfies the requirement of checking. It obviously doesn't satisfy any of the other requirements for complying with the law of the lender, but it does provide a safe harbor for checking for coverage. There are a number of things that are required under the Military Lending Act, and not being the attorney close to the rules, it's not legal advice.
Sure.
But what's required is that for active duty military members and their eligible dependents, there are restrictions on the maximum annual percentage rate or the equivalent interest rate of the loan that can be given out. There's a 36% maximum, and it's calculated in a special way for the Military Lending Act. It includes some fees that might not be included under the traditional Truth in Lending Act calculation of APR. So there's a special APR calculation that's required. In addition, there are certain disclosures that the financial institution is required to make to people who are covered under the Military Lending Act, and those disclosures have to be provided in a written form as well as an audio form. And so it's very important for lenders then to know when somebody's covered, even if the threshold for their lending practices is well below this 36%. Many lenders have found it prudent to say, look, I want to know in any case who's covered under the Military Lending Act, so I can ensure the disclosures are out there, and then I can positively demonstrate to my regulators that I'm checking and ensuring that my practices are compliant with the regulations here.
Jason Lakey is Senior Vice President for Automotive and Consumer Lending at TransUnion, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu. We'll post this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. I'm Tom Temin.
Pentagon Solutions will return after these messages.
Thanksgiving dinner could one day go high tech. A digital revolution in cooking might make even the worst cook's food perfect every time. Imagine if you could vary sugar concentrations from one side of a cake to the other. cook a steak that has both rare and well-done sections, or
you could maybe subtract fat from one part of the meat.
Marcela Quelu of MIT's Media Lab is engineering a machine called Cornucopia that may bring cooking into the digital age.
We believe that one day we're going to be able to manipulate food in the same way that you manipulate photos in Photoshop.
Sharing would be easy, too. Quelu says if he made a delicious lasagna, perhaps he could email you the precise digital recipe and
that machine will make this lasagna exactly the way that I've designed it, or you could make adaptations.
Grandma's home cooking or a slight alteration at the press of a button. For more, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
With your Mayo Clinic Radio Health Minute, I'm Dennis Doda.
I heard blood-curdling scream come out of my husband.
Jen Kordiak vividly recalls the moment playtime turned tragic for her 7-year-old daughter, Amber Rose, who had toppled a 600-pound tractor tire and rim on top of herself.
You couldn't recognize her face. It was cut in half.
She nearly died. The bones around her right eye, nose, and upper and lower jaws were shattered. Numerous operations later, Amber Rose still struggles.
Because everybody stares at me.
To help, pediatric plastic surgeon Dr. Aldous Bite assembled a Mayo Clinic Children's Center team of experts to rebuild her nose and facial bones, restore her sinuses, nerve function, and jaw movement.
We can bring in an unlimited number of different specialists to help each person individually.
There'll be more surgery for Amber Rose as she grows. For now, the return of the left side of her smile says it all.
I was amazed because that's the first time we've seen that move in 3 years.
For Mayo Clinic Radio, I'm Dennis Doda.
The FBI's annual hate crime statistics report shows a 53% increase in the number of multiple bias hate crime incidents when compared to the year before. Furthermore, single bias incidents jumped 6.5% during the same time period.
And the numbers were 5,818 as compared to 5,462.
That was Section Chief Christopher Nicholas of the FBI's Criminal Justice Information Services Division. 2015 was the first year the FBI began collecting data on anti-era bias, which resulted in a count of 37 incidents. This is the 25th anniversary of the FBI gathering and publishing data about bias-motivated crimes.
Our annual hate crimes report provides us information about offenses, victims, offenders, and locations of hate crimes.
The FBI encourages the country's local, state, and tribal law enforcement agencies to submit the data to the FBI so that together law enforcement can better combat the crime. To see the full report, visit FBI.gov. With FBI This Week, I'm Molly Halpern with the Bureau.
This year, I'm looking to put off my holiday shopping as long as humanly possible. Recreation News editor Marvin Bond has a few ideas to at least help you start thinking about the holidays.
The Six Flags Holidays event goes on through January the 2nd. They have a million lights over there for a fantastic show and, of course, holiday entertainment and special treats. And then, of course, they have the theme rides to take advantage of.
Now, Marvin, I am not a Black Friday shopper. Any suggestions for me?
You might want to head over to the Reston Town Center for the only holiday parade in the region that actually takes place the day after Thanksgiving. You can find out more about all of that in our extensive calendar of events on page 24 of the November issue of Recreation News.
And what if I want to get out of town for the holidays?
The Dunes Manor Hotel in Ocean City has a Winterfest package that includes two tickets to the light display plus accommodations. Check it all out at dunesmanor.com. And to find out more about the holiday activities, go to recreationnews.com.
Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News.
You're listening to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
President-elect Donald Trump's transition team is set to meet with Pentagon officials this week. The change in administration could have big implications for Defense Secretary Ash Carter's legacy. Federal News Radio's Scott Massioni has been following this development and joins me now with more. Scott, the transition team seems a little late in getting around to Pentagon issues. What's in store?
Well, we're not exactly sure what's going to be in store. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of secret and top secret things that we're not too privy to. But we know that they're meeting this week and they have not met yet. Ash Carter spoke on Monday, and I think what he was trying to do was basically give a little bit of ease to the establishment. Unease is not good for companies, and he needs to keep a lot of companies happy. And so he's just trying to, basically he said it's been going on for 240 years. We've had a peaceful transfer of power. He's seen transitions in the past, and it's going to go as smoothly as it possibly can. They've been preparing for this no matter what the outcome was going to be. So I think he wants to just kind of allay some of the fears that were happening in industry that, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with the stock market or all these different kinds of things.
So are there specific things that Carter says the Defense Department is doing to get ready for this change?
Yeah. So back in the summer, Bob Work, who's the Deputy Defense Secretary, he tasked the Defense Science Board, I'm sorry, the Defense Business Board, to look at the transition. What's going to happen? How can they use their private sector experience to manage the transition? And they are supposed to come out with a report. It hasn't come out yet that we know about, so it should be coming out pretty soon, because if they're going to use it. But, you know, they just want the private sector's unique advice on what's going to happen. And, you know, Bob Work's been central to the transition. That's been his kind of role as Deputy Defense Secretary for the past couple months as well.
Now, the Carter legacy is kind of a mixed bag. I don't mean to say good and bad mix, but there are some military things, there's some strategic things, and there's a lot of personnel things that he has overseen and pushed, I guess, at the behest of the administration. So let's talk about some of those.
Yeah. Just as a reminder, you know, he did the third offset strategy. That was probably the biggest one, which is to keep the technological superiority of the United States over its adversaries. There's also DIUX, which was part of that, which added in a sort of reach out to industry through that third offset strategy. So he went to Silicon Valley, he put a headquarters there and said, can we get some of these startup companies and harness what they're doing and make them work for the Defense Department? Thirdly, there was the Force of the Future, which was a lot of personnel changes to bring in top talent to the Defense Department. So he did a lot of things like changing the amount of time that people have for maternity leave, making daycare hours longer, creating areas that they could bring private sector people in for a short amount of time to the Defense Department.
Rotational assignments, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
For people. Let's talk about DIUX, for example, because I think that the pivot, if you will, to Silicon Valley, never mind Asia, the pivot to Silicon Valley is part of a larger cultural piece of the Obama administration, which is looking at these entrepreneurs, people that don't generally do business with the Pentagon, the non-traditional companies for the next wave of innovation, as they call it, and technology. Do you think that's likely to survive? I mean, is that a good enough idea that it's really not partisan at this point?
We know that Donald Trump has a lot of business experience, so he can talk to these businesses and possibly cultivate what they have there. But his interest seems to be more in capacity than capability. He wants to add $100 billion to the Defense Department. And what Carter's doing, he's putting money in capability. He wants these new, flashy, exciting, futuristic kind of things, autonomous robots, stuff like that. I think what Donald Trump wants is more ships in the Mediterranean Sea, more ships in the Atlantic. So we might not see such a push for this technological advance, but more for building, shipbuilding, which also kind of goes to what he's been saying is jobs, jobs, jobs. He wants more jobs. That's going to get a lot more jobs in Norfolk when people need to build ships.
Yes, because the current administration has said we expect our military to be smaller numerically, but with having such a large technological advantage that the relative size in terms of numbers of bodies and ships and planes won't matter because it will be more than offset by that. That's unproven, though, at this point.
Right. And, you know, I do want to mention that Congress has also been skeptical of DIUX as well. And within the NDAA, the Defense Authorization Act for 2017, they've said, you know, we want the Defense Department to have more oversight of this, and we want more reports on what you're actually doing with this money.
We're speaking with Federal News Radio Scott Massioni, and there have been a lot of cultural changes in terms of troops that have happened under Ash Carter and under Barack Obama. Don't Ask, Don't Tell got repealed. Now there are benefits and recruitment and opportunities for transgender people. And I think that's been probably more difficult for the military to inculcate maybe than they've let on. What's the outlook, do you think, for those kinds of initiatives?
So that's something that's a lot more up in the air. You know, the Mike Pence is someone who seems to be pretty, let's say, conservative on social issues. And, you know, the repealing of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and especially bringing women into military combat situations, has been an extreme point for Republicans. And, you know, President Trump will only have to sign one piece of paper to change that. So we could see a lot of differences for transgender people, for LGBT people, and for women in what their role is going to be within the military, or if they can even stay in the military.
Or possibly he could figure, you know, that's not a battle worth having when we're trying to get $100 billion increase in the budget for ships, planes, tanks, guns, and boots.
Right. But, you know, it doesn't necessarily even have to be a battle because he doesn't need Congress's approval to do this. He just has to do an executive order, or his, you know, his Secretary of Defense just has to do a policy change. So, you know, and then just go back to don't ask, don't tell, or just a complete ban altogether.
Yeah, that will be definitely something worth watching. Now, Trump has mentioned he wants to defeat ISIS, and he says the generals haven't done it. Well, what they've done is according to policy set forth by the administration. So is Carter, I guess it's probably too soon to ask if he's talking about what an increase in actual military kinetic operations against ISIS might do to the forces and might do to the budget.
Right. Well, we're not 100% sure what he's going to do, but the Defense Department has asked for almost $12 billion in supplemental funding in the past. I think it was last week that they asked for that. So they need Congress's help to get that through. They've been asking for it for this year, and that would keep troops in Afghanistan through 2017. It would go toward extra munitions for counter-ISIL attacks. It would go to also diplomatic State Department type things for the fight against ISIL as well. So, you know, that extra money might help out Trump with what he's been trying to do, too.
And I just wanted to ask you about a detail you're reporting on. The electromagnetic railgun was something of great promise if they could somehow generate enough power on a ship to make it operate. But now Robert Work is saying, well, you know, it turns out maybe there's powder that can do the same thing, and we know how to use powder. That's really easy and cheap relative to the railgun. And so maybe some of the great innovations don't turn out to be all that innovative or useful.
That's definitely a possibility. And also kind of what he was saying in there was that with the third offset strategy, they're trying to give the transition team and the new presidency as many options as possible. So if they want to go with the powder gun, they're going to set them up for that. If they want to go with the electronic magnetic spectrum, they can do that as well.
Federal News Radio, Scott Massioni, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Be sure to read his coverage at federalnewsradio.com. I'm Tom Temin.
You've been listening to Pentagon Solutions. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Pentagon Solutions.